This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Bon Bon. Bon Bon.
Good evening, Drew. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And you, Tom?
I'm doing well.
No, that's good. And tonight is guest night. We have a guest tonight.
We do.
We actually have guests coming on the next few weeks, right?
We do, next week as well. Yep. And we have Stuart Ritter coming in from T. Rowe Price next week.
All right. So, well, who's going to be on the show tonight?
Well, it's interesting. We have a book, and it's baseball season. I was thinking orange and black. It's not orange and black. It's not purple and black, but it's green and black.
I don't know any sport team that uses the colors green and black.
I don't either. So maybe Gary does. But
I bet you there are college teams that use green and black. But I know of no professional team.
That's right. Well, anyway, so we've got Gary Cernovitz. He's a managing director at Lime Rock, an oil and gas-focused private equity firm. He began his career as an oil equity research analyst at Goldman Sachs. But he's really a writer. And he tried some writing in between those two stints, and has written a couple of novels, including, and this is actually his third novel. And so he's done a lot with that. He's a native of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but now he lives in New York with his wife. So.
Oh, great. Gary, are you there?
I am here.
Well, that's fantastic. We appreciate having you on the show tonight. Your book, Green and Black, was quite compelling, and I believe that there's a lot to talk about and a lot to think about in the fossil fuel area. And when I saw your book, I thought, you know, hey, this would be a great interview. So one of the interesting things is you run a fossil fuel private equity company, right? You're a partner in there?
Yeah, I'm a partner, yep, in an oil and gas investment firm.
And you talk in this book to being a self-proclaimed liberal and climate change person, and you take a lot of heat occasionally from friends on this topic that how do you bring together these two positions, the one that you hold as a career and the other one that you personally believe in?
I don't find any Jekyll and Hyde moments where I'm turning into a different person. It's pretty easily reconcilable. I mean, one is an industry that I've been happy and privileged to be a part of, and one is a set of political views. And I think one of the issues is the industry. And I was talking to someone, actually a guy in Maryland just today, that the industry's activities have become sort of strangely politicized. Whereas most of the time, what we spend our time doing is, obviously trying to find investments on behalf of our investors and trying to give capital to entrepreneurs who are trying to increase oil and gas production or kind of provide services or tools to those doing it. So it's being part of the economy, and I don't think inherently the oil and gas business has one political orientation.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I liked about your book is that I thought it was very fair. I thought it was balanced in a lot of ways, saying, I believe in this, but at the same time, this is an important part of our world and our economy, and the two can come together and make a better world in the long term. And, so I really appreciated that, and that's another one of the reasons why we wanted to do this interview today.
Yeah, no, I think, and obviously the occasion of the book is, I've been in the oil and gas business for a while, about halfway through my career, first the inklings are really in the last 6 or 7 years, the shale revolution of first on the gas side and then the oil side came about, and what the green and the black really tries to do is describe, every aspect of the shale revolution, and one part is clearly environmental, but there are some industrial implications, there's implications for America's place in the world, there's implications for, communities where it's happening, and obviously for, topic of your show, for, making and losing money.
Well, that's part of our show, but, we're comprehensive advisors, so we're looking at lots of different features with it.
I'm glad. We'll talk about it all.
Yeah. If we were here just to say, hey, we want you to tell us a hot stock today, I think we'd be a worthless radio show, personally.
And I'd have nothing to answer to.
But, we're at a crossroads in the fossil fuel industry. I think that, between the shale revolution and what it it's brought about in back with America's new production and so forth, and with the advent of renewable energy and Saudi Arabia's response to all this, we're in an incredible crossroad right this minute, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, you know, effectively, almost every assumption I had, and I think most of the people in the oil and gas industry had, about how the industry was going to shape up, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, has been completely undermined. I mean, to go back to 2007, 2008, you know, oil was on its way to $150 a barrel, and you could take it to the bank that, you know, we weren't, you know, maybe peak oil wasn't true, but you could take it to the bank that over a long period of time, oil was going to get ever more expensive, natural gas in the United States would get ever more scarce, we'd have to continue to, you know, import oil at greater and greater amounts, we'd have to start importing gas, and it was going to, you know, and every year we would do that, you know, a little bit of the easier reservoirs would have been extracted and already depleted, and we'd have to go to more expensive and more out-of-the-way places. And with the shale revolution, you know, everything has been reversed. And so when we think about, you know, Saudi Arabia and kind of going through some turmoil, or think about, you know, Russia or Iran on the oil side, it's these countries' sort of basic understanding is they held on to scarce resources with no competitors, and now they have competitors coming out of North Dakota and West Texas and New Mexico. And obviously on the natural gas side, and this is one area that it kind of intersects with kind of some, you know, I think positive environmental outcomes. You know, we now have an oversupply of natural, I mean, a ridiculous oversupply of natural gas. It's about $2 per 1,000 cubic feet versus $8 to $10 just 7 years ago. It's been on the floor for you know, kind of better part of a decade now, and that's allowed us to just sort of displace the coal business. It's allowed us to reduce our carbon emissions.
Yeah.
And it's allowed us to just kind of have, you know, pretty cheap energy, on a relative competitive basis, with some pretty amazing implications.
Yeah, so hold on with me, Gary. We've got to take our first traffic break, and then we're going to come back. What I want to talk about is fracking. What is it really? And, you know, what are the environmental issues with it and so forth, if any, you know? And then we're going to talk about many other things. But right now we have to take traffic, and we'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Do you have a financial planner? Have you ever thought of hiring one, or just need a second opinion? The satisfaction guaranteed service of the Financial Physical is designed with you in mind. Many listeners, just like you, come to me, Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, looking for a firm that is fee-only and can offer comprehensive financial planning. The Financial Consulate has not grown by selling insurance, annuities, and bank products. Instead, we pride ourselves on the wealth of knowledge we can provide to you and your family. Learn more about the Financial Consulate and the services that we can provide at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. Or call to schedule a no-obligation introductory meeting at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Is that an oil song, Tom?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, yeah. I think it's a...
Cars.
Well, there you go. Very good. You know, cars require oil, right, Anita? Right,
and
there you
and
go.
And gas.
Anyway, we're here with Gary Cernovitz, and we're talking Green and the Black. The Green and the Black, that's his book, a complete story, excuse me, of the shale revolution, the fight over fracking, and the future of energy. So, Gary, fracking is not, you know, everybody thinks this is some revolutionary new technology. This has actually been around for a while. It's just that we learned how to use it much better, and there were people that really took advantage of it. Yay? Nay?
Exactly. I mean, the first fracking was done in 1946.
1946?
Yes, where to the football fan, I know, to Ravens, the Chicago Cardinals were the NFL champion in 1946. That's how old it was done. And sort of the second element of sort of modern shale development, which was horizontal drilling. We've been drilling in the industry directionally since even before that, since the 1930s. And, you know, and fracking was, and I, you know, part of the toolbox for certain, but I, you know, talk about in the book that I probably heard of it, but didn't really think of it and never was really central to what I thought of the oil and gas business for most of my career, really, until, you know, about a decade ago, because fracking was the key that, this very old technique was the key that unlocked a new type of oil and gas reserve that people didn't think we were ever going to be able to extract the oil and gas from.
Right, and there were three big guys, George Mitchell, Aubrey McClendon, and Harold Hamm, you talk about, three big people that had a big part in helping this revolution come along. Who were they? What are they all about?
Yeah, I mean, George Mitchell was sort of the George Washington of the shales, if you will. He's kind of the father of it. You know, shales are a type of sort of deep buried rock that contain an incredible amount of oil and gas, but when you drill a well in there, it's like putting a straw into cement. You know, nothing happens, and so you have to, you know, with fracking, put in water, and then you put in some sand to open up the reservoirs, kind of to allow the oil and gas to flow. And people had kind of tried this in places, and George Mitchell got very obsessed with doing this in a field called the Barnett Shale north of Dallas. For 18 years, his company, and it was a publicly traded company, you know, crazily enough, kept on trying to find new ways to apply fracking to this type of rock. 18 years, spent about $250 million, and you know that was in the 80s and 90s, and that was pretty significant in the oil and gas business. And finally, in sort of a Hail Mary approach, kind of tweaking the fluid a bit, was able to unlock produce gas commercially from the Barnett Shale. You know, Aubrey McClendon, you know, who died this year, got a lot of news stories about that. Was really sort of kind of somewhat considered sort of the Steve Jobs of the shales, if you will. Probably maybe it's a little bit hyperbolic, but he is sort of the classic oil and gas, you know, kind of wildcatter personality. He loved deals. He loved drilling. He loved debt. He loved leasing new land. And so what he did is, you know, George Mitchell's kind of breakthrough came in 1998, but it wasn't until sort of Aubrey and a few others like him decided, hey, this may not just work in outside Fort Worth. This may work in Pennsylvania and Louisiana. He could have just was the kind of walked into the room, try to gobble up every oil and gas property he could find, and really created an interesting thing into sort of this revolution, this frenzy, this shale mania. And Harold Hamm, you know, kind of is it kind of written into the legends, and partly because he grew up in incredibly poor circumstances, one of I think 13 children, didn't have shoes, had no electricity in his house. Now, worth about $10 billion. But he was the one that that fracking and sort of the shale revolution always used to be thought of as a natural gas phenomenon, and people still probably think of that primarily, especially out here in the Northeast. But what Harold Hamm and what his company really kind of figured out is this is also a oil phenomenon. You can apply these exact same techniques to oil shales. And so when you think about the Bakken in North Dakota, which is now producing 1 million barrels a day, more than the UK, more than Colombia, more than a lot of these kind of oil provinces we associate with it, out of really nothing, it was really kind of led by Harold Hamm's company, another company called EOG, that really kind of had the faith in both that this was going to be both an oil and a gas story.
So what they're doing, Gary, is they're drilling down, and they're not drilling just straight down. They're drilling, and they're moving sideways, and they're filling it with water and sand at the same time to try to create a hole, a reservoir, like a little lake down there where all the drips will drop into, and next thing you know, you have a big pool. But that does sound environmentally like it's going to do something bad.
Yeah, I mean, I would, I think that's, kind of maybe add, a little bit more specificity to what's happening. So first, you drill down about 1.5 miles.
Only 1.5 miles.
Yeah, well, that's still pretty incredible,
That is incredible. I can't even understand how you could get a drill bit that big.
And basically you connect different pieces. And so the thing you always see when you see movies of guys on a drilling rig floor, there's guys connecting pipe. And so you're just screwing on another piece of pipe as you put the drill bit down. After about 1.5 miles, and sometimes it's 2 miles deep, then you drill, 1 to 2 miles horizontally once you're down there. And then only, in very discrete sections are you sending down water at high speeds into rock that is very, very, it's about as hard of a rock as people have ever extracted. It's impermeable, and that's only kind of cracking the rock. It's not putting water in it. This is used not to kind of fill the reservoir, it's used as a way to force only about a couple hundred feet, north and south of where the actual wellbore is in a very localized area. Then you put in the sand, then you plug that, and you do this again, 20 to 30 times. But this is a very kind of precise mechanical operation, not just, and the oil business and, 120 years ago was definitely like, let's throw something down the hole and see what happens.
So there are a lot of people, you've got these stories in Oklahoma and so forth where they're having earthquakes and they blame it on the shale, drilling, fracking and so forth. And there are states that have outlawed it and so forth. So what's your opinion?
Yeah, my opinion is, there's two things that need to be separated, and then there's just also just sort of a lot of misinformation in the market. First of all, there's a lot of stuff about fracking itself, which is, which the EPA of the Obama administration, who's obviously not known as being particularly friendly to the oil business,
or any part of the fossil fuel business, but okay.
Or any part of it.
Or business in general.
He bankrupted the coal industry single-handedly. But go ahead.
It was a very amusing to watch everyone in the oil and gas business praise Obama when this report came out in last June, saying that the actual fracking process does not lead to systemic or really that many recorded incidences of polluting the water table. I mean, this is, everyone knows Gasland, everyone knows HBO, the dude with the mustache who lit the tap on fire, and it's considered, sort of bedrock truth. this will cause you to light your tap on fire. That's been categorically disproved. The other thing that happens, though, is this is a industrial process. Accidents can happen. In the oil and gas business, like any business, and so a guy can spill something. And for instance, the earthquakes are some folks, not really when they're drilling, but when you drill oil and gas, it produces a lot of water. They were, because so much water is produced when oil and gas production is increasing, they were disposing of it in disposal wells, which has been going on for 100 years, but in deeper ones that cause some earthquakes. So there are, so this isn't one where, if you lived in an area and they start drilling next door to you, you're going to think, well, this is a pleasant addition to the neighborhood. So there are clear NIMBY issues, but there are also, this is also temporary. This is also, and the accidents have been very minimal. So I think what happens politically is, because of the unpopularity probably of the oil and gas business, so historically, is a community will say, listen, something could go wrong. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Other areas, so let's just ban it. Other areas, like in Texas, like in Pennsylvania, say, listen, Pennsylvania is producing, about a quarter of America's natural gas from like nothing, seven years ago. There are groups that say, listen, there's like huge industry that could be created here. Natural gas plays a huge important role in America. Consumers of natural gas get it cheaper. And hey, if this natural gas drilling is happening on my land, I can actually get 20% of the revenue from that natural gas for having done nothing except being lucky enough to
lived here. You're going to have to hold on. I got to take my next traffic break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the financial things now. How to make money? What's everybody doing? What's Saudi Arabia doing? But right now, we got to take traffic. We'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Gary Cernovitz and his book, The Green and the Black. And he's talking about how to make money and do it through the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry. It's a difficult industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got your work cut out for you, Gary, for your investors in a private equity firm, because here's Saudi Arabia and Russia and Iran. Those three probably hold a huge portion of the world reserves of oil. And they're looking around the world and they're saying, if we let fracking continue, and frackers normally make money more in the $60 a barrel oil or better. And if we let fracking, the renewable energy industry compete against us because our prices are $100 a barrel or $80 a barrel, we're not going to be able to sell fossil fuels for any price. So we might as well capture market share and let the price drop to a point that we put a lot of our competitors out of business and we try to make it less profitable for renewables to compete against us. Is that what they're doing, or is there something else going on?
No, I think you're right that this is a business decision on there, not really, you know, a lot of people have a kind of political conspiracy decisions, but, you know... I've heard that, and I disagree.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm with you on that one, where, you know, this is a, you know, a very, you know, you captured it well. I mean, a rational decision where the United States, between 2011 and 2014, was increasing the supply of oil more than the increase of demand globally.
Right.
One country that was supposed to be, you know, the rump end producer that was just, you know, on its way to declining forever had suddenly kind of screwed up the basic realities of the oil and gas business due to the shale revolution. And Saudi didn't have a lot of choices. Now, I think the interesting dynamic now is, you know, your $60 to $70 was true and probably over the long term was true. And you've seen that in the amount of rigs drilling for the United in the United States has declined like 80%, and a lot of people aren't drilling. But the people who are drilling are able to make money at $40 or $50 a barrel. And the question is, when do you get back to the United States able to grow production at 1 million barrels a day per year like it was doing in that period? And globally, the world consumes about 95 million barrels a day per day. And so the interesting thing is, you know, the Saudi Arabia, and they were really the kind of instigators of this, have made the U.S. business more and more efficient and driven down the break-even cost. So there is a lot of consensus now that the U.S. will be able to kind of resume its growth of the shale revolution at $70 a barrel. Some say 60, some say 80, but it's around there. And the interesting thing for Saudi Arabia is, their economy doesn't, you know, they can make a lot of money at $70 a barrel, but their economy is based on them making $100 a barrel in terms of what's called the fiscal break-even price. You know, the bread, the circuses, the proxy wars, all the other kind of, you know, kind of things that aren't very pleasant about, that are kind of bribed off in a place like Saudi Arabia, is based on $100 a barrel for a country of 30 million people that 70% are under 30 years old, with no real job prospects. So the interesting thing that, you know, people in the U.S. oil business say is like, listen, you know, this is unpainful for us for sure. No one likes, you know, $40 a barrel. No one likes the rigs, you know, being let down. There are people going bankrupt. There are people who are going to lose their fortunes. It's not a pleasant experience. But at some price, the market will rebalance and the U.S. oil business will be more competitive. If that price is below where the Saudi government needs for it to work, that, you know, the outcome for them isn't, you know, they're going to go bankrupt. The outcome for them is someone's going to, you know, remove them from power and maybe violently.
Yeah, but, you know, we have to consider the other side of the coin that's happening, which is the renewables. Solar energy is becoming much more technologically advanced and technologically cheaper to produce electricity out of solar rays. And in addition, you've got companies like Tesla out there who are saying, you know, I can make an electric car go as long as your gasoline-driven car, and I can make it go as fast as your gasoline-driven car. And so if they can sell an electric car that can go the same range and the same amount of speed when I want it, and I can go home at night and plug it in the wall, and I don't have to be stopping at gas stations and putting gasoline in my car, I'm going to want an electric car if they can bring the price in line and so forth, which they seem to be doing. It's not a bright future for the fossil fuel industry if you put all this together. What say you?
Well, I think long term, you know, oil, you know, there will be a replacement for oil, and gas and fossil fuels over the next 100 years. The question is, you know, what about the next 20 years? And for, you know, the investable time frame of most folks, you know, 20 years is still, you know, thinking about companies and what they're valued at, that's a pretty good metric. Here's a statistic for you, I think electric cars are fine, and, you know, I would surely consider buying one, but there are now 170,000 electric cars. Goldman Sachs just did a report yesterday on this. There are 250 million gasoline-driven cars. If, you know, the electric cars kind of reach the penetration of 3.5 million electric cars, and that's not going to be, you know, by Tesla alone, that's not going to be done next year, maybe in a decade, they would reduce, you know, U.S. oil demand by about 1%. You know, wow. The other thing is of course that, you know, renewables, produce about, you know, 2.5%, 3% America's electricity. Gas and coal each produce about or supply about a third of America's electricity, with the rest of kind of nuclear and hydropower. You know, you have a huge ability to displace coal, for instance, through renewables and natural gas, and you have a huge market share that the oil and gas business and the shale revolution will participate in, because also gas works very well with coal and wind. Solar and wind, because those are kind of have intermittency problems, because you think about solar doesn't work at night, wind doesn't work, you know, random days when it's not windy, and natural gas power plants can, using turbine engines that can quick start, can come on immediately to kind of fill that power. So in terms of the power sector, you kind of need today, barring sort of a revolutionary change in battery storage power, or something that Bill Gates called in an Atlantic Monthly article, you know, an energy miracle. Barring that, you need natural gas as part of it. And frankly, we just have an economy based on, you know, kind of oil as a transportation fuel with a lot of installed base. And I think you're going to continue to use that. And I think the good thing for, you know, American investors, thinking about American opportunities is, you know, yes, at some point, you know, things will rival it. But as long as we are in the oil and gas consuming era, you know, we now have domestically some of the best, most economic, highest returning opportunities. So I would be much more scared if I was, you know, thinking about investing in a Russian oil company or an offshore Brazil or offshore Angola opportunity than I am thinking about, you know, having the opportunity in our own backyard to have that incremental sort of barrel at lower cost, very attractive in terms of capital recycling, obviously good in terms of sort of, you know, with all the hoopla still pretty politically stable here relative to Brazil and Mexico.
Got to hold on for me, because I got to finish this last break, and then we can get on and talk a little more about, how do investors look at this future of fossil fuels. But right now, I have to take traffic break. Right, be right back now with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Got an accident on the outer loop of the Beltway at Liberty Road. It's got the right lane blocked there. Stop and go traffic through Woodlawn. Inner loop's running slow off and on from Southwestern Boulevard toward Wilkins Avenue, and then it jams up on the inner loop through Woodlawn between Baltimore National Pike and 795. Watch for slow traffic off and on the inner loop through Towson from Charles Street to Paring Parkway. And 100 westbound, that's jammed up from Longgate Parkway headed toward 29. 29 northbound is jammed up from 175 up toward Route 40. And the Baltimore-Washington Parkway northbound, watch for delays through Jessup from 32 toward 175. It's running slow off and on. I-97 southbound delays from 32 as you head toward Generals Highway toward 178. I'm Scott Brady for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Do you have a financial planner? Have you ever thought of hiring one? Or just need a second opinion? The satisfaction guaranteed service of the financial physical is designed with you in mind. Many listeners, just like you, come to me, Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, looking for a firm that is fee-only and can offer comprehensive financial planning. The Financial Consulate has not grown by selling insurance, annuities, and bank products. Instead, we pride ourselves on the wealth of knowledge we can provide to you and your family. Learn more about the Financial Consulate and the services that we can provide at drewtig.com. That's DrewTig.com. Or call to schedule a no obligation introductory meeting at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
I've always had aches here and there, but as the pain became more frequent, even standing to play a little game of fetch was too much on my knee.
Drop, drop. Millie, drop the ball.
That's why I turned to MedStar Orthopedics. They have the largest team of surgeons, specialists, and rehab experts in Maryland at more than 20 locations.
Good girl. Now sit.
They have new treatment alternatives, less invasive procedures, and faster recovery times. They put a plan together so that I could get back, I mean my dog could get back, to everyday activity. Okay, I'll throw. Whew, what a rough life.
MedStar Orthopedics recently earned advanced subspecialty certification from the Joint Commission for Excellence in Hip and Knee Replacement Surgery. To schedule an appointment, visit MedStarOrtho.org/radio. That's MedStarOrtho.org/radio.
Life's too short to live with joint pain. Talk to a MedStar orthopedics expert today.
Is your access control and camera system a web-based system? With all these major companies getting hacked lately, you may want to rethink your security system being a cloud-based system. Give Crestlock.com a call and let them show you a system that can be maintained on your site. Crestlock.com has a state-of-the-art showroom and a mobile showroom we can bring to your site. Give Crestlock.com a call for a free security evaluation at 1-866-652-4747. That's 1-866-652-4747.
Come to Drug City Pharmacy to boost your immunity system with flu shots and shingles shots. At Drug City Pharmacy, discover a great selection of diabetic shoes and socks. Are you taking the correct vitamins? Call or see Dr. Mark Lichtman at Drug City for new supplements to help relieve gout, blood sugar problems, hot flashes, ringing in the ears, weight problems, and many other nagging health problems. Call Dr. Mark Lichtman today at 410-284-2424. 410-284-2424, or visit Dr. Mark Lichtman at Drug City Pharmacy.
Comcast Business knows how to take your business to the next level. That's why we introduced Comcast Business Wi-Fi Pro. With next-level speed, coverage, marketing, and control features. All designed to help your business run smoothly. But we didn't stop there. Instead, we took it even further. Which is why Comcast Business Wi-Fi Pro offers what Verizon's business Wi-Fi doesn't. Remote access, advanced security, and access to over 10 million hotspots nationwide. Looks like taking your business to the next level starts with ditching Verizon. Give your business an edge with Comcast Business Wi-Fi Pro. Call 800-501-6000 today. Comcast Business, built for business. Restrictions apply. Available with Comcast Business Deluxe 50 and above. Call Comcast Business for details.
We're here from 1-800-GOT-JUNK to clean out your garage.
How did you get here so fast?
I'll open the garage door.
Follow me, guys.
Yes, sir.
You sure you can handle it?
Zero problem, sir.
The radio ads say all we have to do is point.
The radio speaks the truth, ma'am. Give it a try.
Can you fight your way to that refrigerator back there? It's gone.
Now it's my turn, honey. I've really been dreading trying to move that big... I would never have believed it.
Can you take that big pile of...
Do you have anything in the attic or the backyard you'd like to make disappear?
Follow me. How about... And could you take...
How do you guys do that?
It's gone. It's all gone.
All you have to do is point.
We work until midnight, 7 days a week.
So you never have to take off work to meet us.
I never knew our garage was so big.
Wait till you see the backyard.
Just call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
It's brand new and improved, easier to navigate, and features more stories and news than ever before. WCBM.com should be part of your daily routine. Stream us from your PC, Mac, tablet, or smartphone at WCBM.com.
Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back with Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we've got Gary Cernovitz with us tonight, and the book we're reviewing is The Green and the Black. Just came out here in February of 2016. Gary, I know the book's out there on Amazon, other places. Any other blog or contact or website you want to give out for people to kind of follow your work and follow your news?
Yeah, it's a website, GaryCernovitz.com, GaryCernovitz, and there's some more sort of articles on the topic, some articles not on the topic, and so I post stuff up there, and also a contact form if people have questions, complaints, insults, praise, whatever you have. Send them in.
Hey, Gary, we only have about 6 minutes left in the last segment of our show. Usually, as usual, when I have a good interview, it goes like lightning quick. But a question that I think, at least that I'd like to hear your take on is, you know, pipelines, master limited partnerships. A lot of people jumped into these thinking, you know, this is an easy way to make a lot of income. It's guaranteed. It's, you know, that's their thinking. And now all of a sudden they're waking up finding MLPs aren't nearly as safe as they thought they were. What's your take on the MLPs?
Yeah, I mean, this is not something we do professionally. We don't invest in the midstream. We don't invest in the pipelines. I can say I have two of them in my own account, and so even the geniuses are not such geniuses. Those are not up to put it mildly. You know, I do think though, it's sort of over the long term. You know, if you think about U.S. you know, onshore oil production tripling, you think about natural gas production maybe rising another 50 to 100%. We are going to need infrastructure. We're going to need, you know, gathering and processing. We're going to need long-haul pipelines. And so sort of the long-term sort of, you know, need for growth capital and incremental capital is going to be there. Now, you know, a lot of MLPs, you know, were a little bit more ambitious than they should have been as they were selling themselves as fixed income vehicles and operating as, you know, sort of more growth-oriented companies and buying gas stations and all the like. So I think you got to be careful. You got to be selective. You know, kind of like in any stock, you should probably, you know, not be too clever about picking individuals. But I do think, you know, over the next 10 years, the amount of, you know, oil and gas infrastructure will increase, and that will give some opportunities for the MLPs to kind of generate more throughput and hopefully generate more income and hopefully, you know, be a little bit more candid that there is commodity risk and a little bit more prudent in how they use leverage and how they kind of protect themselves, because it's gonna you know, oil and gas is always gonna be a volatile business.
So you know, I agree with you that no industry, the buggy whip industry, didn't disappear overnight. Doesn't just happen overnight. It takes years and years for people to get to the point where they're no longer using buggies and no longer need buggy whips. Okay, so no doubt the oil and gas industry still has a good 40 or 50 years or even more, for all I know, to go until that breakthrough battery or that breakthrough solar technique, et cetera, you know, comes through. But at the same time, one of the problems with the oil and gas industry where we are today is that they're competing against governments, and governments like Saudi Arabia and Iran and Russia, they really don't care about profit. All they care about is cash flow. How do you compete with them?
You compete with them by, you know, breaking their monopoly on oil and gas production, and we've already done that. So you compete with them by knowing that they have governments that have been, you know, sort of criminally irresponsible, oppressive, using propaganda and wars, depending on, you know, the cash flow from this oil and gas property. Well, the U.S., because of engineering, because of ingenuity, is now able to lower the global price of oil. We've done it very radically. I don't think it's going to stay there, but it's going to stay lower. And these governments that, you know, they don't have other options. The U.S. economy is a flexible, dynamic economy. The oil and gas business is filled with, you know, interesting and clever engineers who are trying to kind of, you know, apply all that ingenuity to lower, you know, to both make them money, but to deliver, you know, cheap costs to consumers. That will work. It will settle out at some price. We're kind of in the driver's seat in some ways of what that price will be based on sort of, you know, engineering and based some on geology. The groups that used to rule the world, the governments, you know, in terms of the oil world, are now price takers, to a large extent. And, you know, and that puts them in a very, very frightening situation. The Deputy Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia just announced that he wants to take the family business, effectively sell it over the next 5 years and go into the world's largest sovereign wealth fund of 2 years. Doesn't seem like a country, or, you know, and who knows if that's going to happen, that is well positioned to kind of withstand, you know, over the next 15 years. And that would have been just sort of ridiculous to propose 10 years ago, given the fact that we just assumed oil and gas would be getting ever more scarce, ever more expensive. And if you held the world's biggest oil reserves, you could just count on, you know, sort of rising revenue to feed and sort of please a growing population.
Well, Gary, we only have a minute now, okay? And so how does China play into all this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, China is clearly important, though I would say, unlike a lot of industries like metals and mining, where China consumes half of all sort of iron ore and things like that, it only consumes about 12% of oil. So and the one thing that you're seeing in China is gasoline demand in China has been growing like gangbusters even last year. What's not growing is diesel used in, you know, for industrial purposes, used for trucking, used for kind of small generators. So I think China, you know, everyone assumes that it's going to grow, you know, not at the blistering pace before, but, you know, you're still seeing a rising consumer class, rising gasoline, and it's sort of balancing out with diesel to be a modest growth, growing commodity, and that should be fine for the global oil and gas business. As long as it's a commodity demand that grows globally, you know, 1 to 1.5% a year. That's all it ever does, with some rare exceptions. And I think there's no evidence that over the long term China is going to accelerate faster than that or sort of completely fall apart, where it kind of doesn't allow sort of the demand to grow at that kind of rate.
Gary, as usual, a great interview, and it ends lightning quick. We're out of time. Your book, The Green and the Black, and your website you gave us was GarySernovitz.com. GarySernovitz.com, right?
Perfect.
Yeah, Gary, we really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Gary.
It was a great interview. It's an important topic. Where's the fossil fuel industry headed? And I think Gary just gave us a great... This is a book you ought to read if you're interested. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.